Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, dear saints of God. Good afternoon, and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with the one and only Sister Marie. Well, we are happy to be in studio t- today because Sister Marie has been experiencing bad weather. I am currently right now under the eye of the storm, and we are able to do a show today. Glory be to God. Before I move on and bring Sister Marie on, she's already in the studio. She's in the green room, like the movie stars before they come out and meet the audience before a big show, like on Johnny Carson. She's in the green room. She's getting all dolled up and ready to go, and Chico is right there with her, ready to come out too. Before we bring on Sister Marie, let me just remind you all that we're praying for Brother Kevin Morris. And, you know, Brother Kevin has these complications. He's got the diabetes and he's got the bone cancer. So let's pray for him. Let's keep him in our prayers. Let's keep him before the Lord, because there's nothing too hard for the Lord. Also, we're praying for Sister Irene Katowski. She needs prayer. They took an MRI. They saw something in the MRI. You know, it looked malignant. So she's going in for an exploratory surgery on Monday, and we're just going to pray that there's nothing malignant. Praying, we're believing, we're trusting God, as we all do. You know, all of us, one day or another, every single one of us is going to get the bad news. One day you're going to go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to tell you, hey, listen, this is it. What do you do then? You hold on to the Lord like you've been holding on every day of your life. And that day more than ever. So let's continue to pray for our brothers and sisters. Today it's them, tomorrow it can be you. Also, don't forget, Sister AJ was in studio. She was in studio yesterday. We had a great time. We had a great show, tearing apart this Dallas Jenkins, this goofball, this apostate, because that's what he is. Anytime you take money from the Mormons, that's what you are, an apostate. Because look, in the book of Revelation, Mystery Babylon is a whore. She's the mother of harlots. And what the whores do, they get into bed with other whores. That's what they do. That's the mystery religion. And we don't sugarcoat it around here. So Dallas, if you're listening, you can call the broadcast anytime you want, and we're going to hold your feet to the fire. We're going to ask you why your whole show is a mumbo-jumbo of the Gospels. It's a mess. It's like, my daughters are cooking, my daughters, and they're young. They're young girls. My daughters are young girls, young women. And when my daughter makes rice and beans, she doesn't make rice and beans and spaghetti and meatballs, and she doesn't do, chicken broccoli. She doesn't make a whole dish of slop. She knows what she's doing. And this guy took the four Gospels and has made slop out of it. Shame on him. He's a false teacher. That's what he is. And don't try to ride on your daddy's coattails. Your daddy's a heretic too. That's what he is, a heretic, for sponsoring you and for backing you up. The Lord said to the prophets, cry aloud and spare not. And that's what we do. That's what we do. So, great show yesterday, but we're going to have a wonderful show today. I'm so looking forward to this broadcast. And so let's see if Sister Marie, if they brought her out of the green room, they got to do what they got to do to the stars. Sister Marie, did they bring you out the green room yet?
Oh, stop. Stop. You're starting out bad here.
Listen, we don't even have a green color, much less a green room.
Yes, absolutely. Well, mine is kind of a really kind of an olive green, the one I'm in. So
okay,
but,
all right. Okay.
It's not the green room.
Yeah.
It's an odd green. You know, it's not a. It's a soft green.
I used to hear that nincompoop Paula White say, Oh, when I get to do New Destiny, they take me right into the green room where they prep me up for my preaching.
Yes.
Moron. Moron.
Moron.
Moron.
Yes. Oh. Oh, boy.
What a mess.
So how's your weather?
What a mess.
How's
well,
your weather?
We're in the midst of the storm. We're in the midst
yeah.
of the storm. I had to take two dogs out today. And when I took the first one out, you know, he's a big dog. He's a puppy, but he's a big dog. And he pulled me, and I slipped on the ice, and he was dragging me. That was dog number one. And then dog number two, he saw a cat underneath the porch. So he was out there for a half hour just looking at the cat and didn't want to do anything. And I'm kicking him in the fanny. Hurry up and get your business done because I'm getting soaking wet here.
Right.
That's it. That's it. So I got, you know, it's horrible out. Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, we.
And it's only the beginning.
You're a good weather warrior, by the way, because I had you pray about ours. We were due 16 to 18 inches yesterday and today. And so far, we only have 5, which is nothing to us, 5
no.
inches. And, you know, we'll see how the day goes, but I don't see it snowing right now. So
right,
if we
right.
get away with 5 when we were due 16 to 18, where I'm at,
right.
hey,
right.
I call you good.
Sure,
good
sure, 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 sure. Well, you know, when you're a false prophet, 85% doesn't cut it. You have to be 100%.
Yes,
so, you know, even if you only got 5 inches, I would be a false weather warrior because I didn't get rid of all the snow.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like Kenneth Copeland is still spitting at COVID-19. He's still spitting.
Yes. Oh, you can't make that up, can you?
No, you
it's
can't.
Amazing.
You can't make it up. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And
no.
you know, and Kenneth Copeland was spitting, and Marcus Lamb died.
Yeah.
Right? He died. After spitting that, you know, and be gone, and we burn you up, COVID-19, we burn you, and Marcus Lamb died.
Marcus got it, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, the spit. He was spitting, and all that spit landed on Marcus.
Oh, you're so bad. You started out today.
Oh, they're
today.
Nuts. They're,
you're full
oh,
of
they're
it
nuts.
Today.
They're nuts. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I
yeah.
know.
These are nutty people. These are nutty people. So,
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy.
But listen,
I forgot to mention,
which I mentioned yesterday, and I get so excited. I get so wound up. You know, when we do these shows, so I got to control myself. But I forgot to tell the saints that I'm pastoring a little church. 10 to 12 people are in this little church. The church was dying, and I saw this little ad in the newspaper, and it said part-time pastor. And, of course, you know, with 10 to 12 people, that's all you really need, a part-time pastor. But I answered the little ad. I answered the little ad, and they had no choice but to, you know, scrape the barrel and take me as their pastor. And so I'm pastoring this church, and we started a Tuesday night prayer meeting. And I want to, if there's anybody out there who is going to a church but doesn't have a prayer meeting to go to, well, we do this prayer meeting on the phone. It's a conference call where everybody gets on. And it's on Tuesday night. So if you want more information, just contact me, and I'll give you all the information. And what we do is from 7 to 7:30, we have a Bible Institute where we have an able, capable teacher teaching on prayer. And then from 7:30 to 8:30, we all put in our different prayer requests, and we start praying for healing, and we start praying for miracles and finances. And of course, listen, the good thing about this prayer meeting is that you don't have to sow seeds when we're not telling you, okay, sow a $90 seed to get $90 or 90 days worth of rain or 90 days worth of miracle.
Yeah.
We don't do any of that. We just simply
pray.
It's a real, real old-fashioned prayer meeting. So if you guys want to join me on Tuesday night, that's from 7 to 8:30. The first half hour is a prayer institute, and then the last hour is prayer. We had a glorious time last Tuesday. So contact me if you want to join me and my little church online for prayer. And we have other people joining from all over the country. I've been sending out emails, so people are joining. Because, look, people can't find churches.
That's right.
There's no prayer meeting to go to. So, again, I had to pastor this church because my wife and kids were bouncing around from one place to another. And my wife kept telling me, you got to start a church.
Right.
But I never felt led to do that. And so I got to tell you, the church was established in 1874.
Wow.
And the building is massive. It's a huge church, huge monster church building. And by the grace of God, now I'm the pastor. So, let's see what the Lord will do. So notice, I didn't have to do a building fund. I didn't have to rent a stable or, I didn't have to do any of that. The Lord just put that in my hands. And
amazing.
Let's see what God will do. So
I'm sure
if you want to join
fantastic.
The prayer meeting. Yep. So pray for me because, I'm kind of a wild man. I don't want to scare
people
off.
I'll pray for them, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
yeah.
So, all right. So we have a great show today. Tell us about the show so we can get started here.
We're going to talk about something called the Gordian Knot. And that's a term from a classical myth and Greek legend. And what it is it's a complicated knot. And it was tied by King Gordias of Phrygia that Alexander the Great cut with a sword. It was the only way to break it, I presume. That's why he did that.
Right.
But it's often used as a metaphor for an intractable problem, like a problem hard to deal with or a problem out of control. Or a problem. Sometimes people think you can't solve the problem, So that's why Alexander the Great cut it with a sword. That solved the problem to him. So, I think that's what it's called. And we're going to use an audio from True Stream Media. Now, that's one of my go-to people for these type of subjects. We've used them before in a couple things. These people, to me, and we'll use them in the future, we will, because there's a lot of subjects that they touch on that we need to deal with. They're fantastic researchers, these two. I'm not sure where their spiritual stance is, what they believe, but I can tell you they're great researchers, and we'll hear from them more in the future. I forget the exact show we use them for, but they're good. Now, I believe that you'll make the connection and understand more about what we're dealing with in society from this audio. The image of this is like two chain links together, facing in different directions. They're linked together with no seam. So that's one image, or another can be several of them linked together. So what it kind of represents when they're all rolled together is a mixture. And it's a mixture, that's rolled up as one, bundled together.
Right.
And that's kind of what's going on in society. Any comments before I continue?
No, I'm just looking forward to this. You asked me if I had heard about the story of the Gordian knot, and I had to admit, no, I never heard of that. I was intrigued.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this. You know.
Well, it shows how things sometimes, you know, there's a problem. I think when you think about it, it's a problem that, a hard problem, but it's a problem that gets out of control. You know, it's hard to deal
right.
with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it had to be cut with a sword.
Right.
And that's kind of metaphoric within itself.
Sure.
You know, when you think about it, you know, you can look at it biblically that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, you know, cut with a sword. So I feel it's interesting. In the opening of the main audio that we're doing, there's a quote that says, "We've arranged a global civilization in which most crucial elements, transportation, communications, and all other industries, agriculture, medicine, education, entertainment, protecting the environment, and even the key democratic institution of voting, profoundly depends upon science and technology." And this is what it states in the beginning of the audio. "We have also arranged things so that almost no one understands science and technology." Well, that's the agenda, but it continues. "This is a prescription for disaster. We might get away with it for a while, but sooner or later, this combustible mixture of ignorance and power is going to blow up in our faces." Now, this was This was written by Carl Sagan, and we all remember Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in his book, The Demon Haunted World. You know, very interesting. And that's page 26, chapter 2 of that book. So, interesting statement. Profoundly, you know, prophetic that it will blow up in their face, you know, eventually,
I think,
you know. So what I did is I just pulled out a short clip. Now, Carl Sagan wrote that in 1994. Okay, so I found a clip from 1994, a short clip of Carl Sagan, and this was his own warning in his own words. You know, we have to remind everybody our answer and the world's answer is Christ. We know that. You know, it's a mission field out there right now. People see what's going on, but they don't understand it. You know, they don't understand what's happening. So, you know, for us, it's a mission field. I want to put that in there. So I found a short clip of Carl Sagan talking a little bit. It's the closest I could find to what we're talking about. And this is from 1994. So that's audio one. It's only a 2-minute, 12-second clip if you want to play it.
Yep, let me get it right now.
"We have a civilization based on science. We have a civilization based on science and technology. And we've cleverly arranged things so that almost nobody understands science and technology. Now that is as clear a prescription for disaster as you can imagine. It's a combustible mixture of ignorance and power. There's another, just speaking personally, another reason why I think popularizing science is important, why I try to do it. And it's a foreboding I have. Maybe ill-placed, of an America in my children's generation or my grandchildren's generation, when all the manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when we're a service and information processing economy, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of a very few and no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues, when the people, the people, I mean the broad population in a democracy, when the people have lost the ability to set their own agendas or even to knowledgeably question those who do set the agendas. When there is no practice in questioning those in authority. When clutching our crystals and religiously consulting our horoscopes, our critical faculties in steep decline, unable to distinguish between what's true and what feels good, we slide almost without notice into superstition and violence.
Pretty prophetic, even though he doesn't claim to be a prophet.
Right, right. You know, and like I said, that statement, part of that statement was from the Demon Haunted World, page 26, chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So that falls in, that falls right in to the Gordian knot. That is what we're dealing with. You know, we're separating truth from reality, what's going on, what isn't going on, what games are being played. And I think we need to learn that. You know, I think it'll help you understand. We need to understand the agenda. And we also need to understand how long this agenda has been going on and moving forward. You know, biblically, it started in the garden. You know, someone, you know, the serpent. The serpent,
right.
Wanting to be, you know, the knowledge of the serpent,
mm-hmm.
Wanting to be like God. You know, this is what this is. And so I think, you know, we can get some great insight from this. And through it, you know, you can stop it as you like.
Okay.
And we'll go along and just chop away at that. There's a lot in this. You're going to run into commercials, too. But there's a lot of information in here. You know, these people are able to take an audio and compact this in an hour, you know, and you have to take it apart. You really do,
mm-hmm.
Piece by piece, because there's so much in this. I don't have that ability to do that. I can understand
right.
it in an hour. But to articulate it back in an hour, everything that's going
mm-hmm.
on is just almost impossible. So in
right.
here, you're going to hear some quotes. I took a few quotes that are listed in here from Jacques, I think his name is Alou, and he's a French philosopher, law professor, sociologist, lay theologian, and he's also described as a Christian anarchist. Which is strange. This guy is really odd. I mean, there's a lot. Researching him would be a good thing, probably. He has a lot going on. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
Never heard of him.
Or not, but he's...
No, never heard of him.
It's all kind of weird, his belief system. But if you look at some of it, it's kind of what we're dealing with today. So...
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to quote some of the things that he talks about in there, because he is kind of weird. You know, there's a lot,
okay.
you know, goes right along with what's going on. So
right.
I'll take some of his quotes as you go along, you know, and you stop it. If there was a quote in there, you know,
okay.
let me know and we'll just move as we can. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay, here in the beginning of the video, it says...
I just
we've
read
arranged
that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Okay.
No, that's okay. We've arranged that. Yeah, I said that was in the beginning of the audio. Thank you.
I feel like I've been silent a lot lately because I'm frustrated, because I don't know what to do. I understand what's happening.
How's the volume on that? Is that good? Does that sound good? Or is it too
perfect.
Loud?
Perfect.
Okay.
No, perfect.
And in some senses, I've seen it coming for a long time. And with all the levels of this problem that have kept coming over the years, it's been really difficult to see the way out of this. It's the trash compactor. And it's been really difficult to witness what's going on, knowing the truth inherently, as many of you do. And it's especially difficult during a moment of highly orchestrated media talking points and this all-out coordinated takeover of society, which is patentedly fascist, by the way, but it's really just ingrained fully into the system that has developed for more than a century now. And it's been really difficult because I've not only felt like I am unable to do anything about what's going on, but it's really felt like any sane thoughts, even angry thoughts, it's just like screaming into a hurricane or trying to sing melodically during a blaring concert. It's all for naught. No one's going to hear you. It just gets drowned out in the larger picture, and it just feels like a debilitating drain on my energy to try to keep up with it. And even though it's the right thing to speak out about it, keeping up with speaking out against those things at a certain point feels draining. Isn't that something? It's been difficult to keep up with all these negative news items, even trying to study what's underneath them, even trying to see them for what they are. And now being taunted by such an obvious ruse has been all the harder. It's been hard to see people go along with it, and hearing far too many of them cry for more and justify what's happening. And it's been very difficult to see them pretend that there's a consensus around this.
Now, one of the things that we've talked about in the past is
mm-hmm.
that it's hard for us to keep up with all of the false prophets and teachers on the internet, in the church, on social media platforms, because they keep multiplying
mm-hmm.
like cockroaches.
Yes.
It's
yes.
just hard to, you know, who can keep up? It's so daunting, right?
Yes. I mean, I felt what he said. He said that, and I felt that. That's exactly how I feel, and I know you feel the same way.
Right.
You know, it is. It is. You can't believe it. So what else were you
yeah,
going to say?
No, that's it. That's that I can't keep up. I can't seem to keep
mm-hmm.
up with all the false teachers.
They're
yeah. just, you know. You give 1 week to Todd Bentley, then the next week you're dealing with Dallas Jenkins, the next week you're dealing with Denson Franklin, the next week you're dealing with
mm-hmm.
Paula White. And there
yeah.
aren't enough days in the week to just deal with all these false teachers and their false teaching. You got Jennifer LeClaire. You know, she's like, Jennifer LeClaire is like 50 false prophets and teachers all rolled
yes,
up into
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Yes. Kat Kerr is just as bad.
Right.
Believe it or not.
Right.
You know.
So there
yeah,
you have it. I mean,
I feel
you
it.
Just have, there's too many.
Yeah.
We're overrun. We're just overrun.
You know, he's feeling that in a worldly sense, and I see that, you know what I mean?
In the spiritual.
In the Christian. Yes, in
yes.
the spiritual. I see that, too, and I felt that when he said that, because you just get overwhelmed. There's so much coming at us from all areas. And you say, you know, what do I deal with? Just what do I deal with first? You know,
mm-hmm.
you can feel it and you can see it, but then you have to articulate that to other people. And it
Correct.
Can be difficult because it's like, where do you begin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to start to explain these things. And I think
yep.
the Lord has laid it out great the last 6 years. I really believe that with all my heart, that the Lord put these shows together for the last 6 years, each show. And so now we're, you know, we know what we're looking at here. You know, this is not surprising to us.
Mm-hmm.
It really isn't. You know, it was coming down
right.
the pipes. We've been yelling about it for, 6 years now, that this is coming. But we had to start at the beginning because when we started, they weren't in the open like they are now. They were hiding, you know, in plain sight, but they were hiding. So, and they kept quiet, the things that, you know, the plans and stuff. And we're able now to see some of these and dig into it,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
to see what's going on. So, yeah. Yeah, I can relate to what he's saying.
Yeah, false teachers are like zombies, right? Now,
mm-hmm.
the apologist, those who deal with polemics or apologetics,
mm-hmm.
we have the shotgun approach, and then we have the silver bullet approach. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The shotgun approach is when you do a show and you talk about 10 to 15 different false teachers. So in
mm-hmm.
a shotgun pellet, in a shotgun casing, there's like 100 pellets. So when there's a shotgun blast, you're hoping that a pellet would, you know, hit a zombie, right? So that's
mm-hmm.
one approach. And so in one show, if you, like some of your news broadcasts, you've done 15 different topics, right? So you are
mm-hmm.
addressing 15 different false teachings. But then there's the show where you just do the silver bullet approach, where you just have one bullet,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to put down a person like Paula White,
mm-hmm.
right? Just one bullet
yeah.
for one false teacher. The problem, see, this
right.
is the problem. If you've ever watched zombie movies, the goal is not to allow the zombies to bite you. Because if the zombies
yeah.
bite you, then you, in a few hours, you're walking like them and you're looking to bite on somebody because you become a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you use the silver bullet approach or the shotgun approach, there's just too many zombies. You're going to get bit.
Right.
Because there's just too many of them.
Right.
I mean, they're multiplying. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Like they're cockroaches.
yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So,
yep.
you know, and then the other thing is, you know, these guys, look at Benny Hinn. Look how long Benny Hinn's been around. The guy doesn't die. Right?
Yeah,
look how long it took Fred Price to die. Look how long
mm-hmm.
it took Marcus Lamb to die. You know, they have these false – look at Kenneth Copeland. That guy is a false prophet of false prophets, and he's still making noise.
Yeah.
And
you know, I think
so,
that's God's grace in a way because, you know, God does give people time to repent. You know, it seems like these people last a long time. And I think, you know, looking at it, that God may be giving them time to repent before they go out. You know, who knows? Because they do seem to be in their 90s and almost 100 before they leave, you know.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Look at Oral Roberts. Look how long Oral Roberts lasted.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you know, so they're like eternal cockroaches. You can spray them with
yeah.
Raid, and they keep coming back week after week.
Right.
How many shows? How many shows did I do on Paula White? I was spraying her with cockroach spray every week, and every week she kept coming back stronger.
Yep, that was a long
yeah, so,
series you did.
So that's it. That's it, boy. You know.
Is that we can get into, I'll get into it in a little bit, is they're fulfilling scripture too. They're being used. They don't, you know, these people, there's a lot of these people being used to fulfill scripture.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
you know.
Well, I like this guy already. I like this guy. He's,
yeah.
I like him. Okay.
Yeah.
Gain on my energy to try to keep up with it. And even though it's the right thing to speak out about it, keeping up with speaking out against those things at a certain point feels draining. Isn't that something? It's been difficult to keep up with all these negative news items, even trying to study what's underneath them, even trying to see them for what they are, and now being taunted by such an obvious ruse has been all the harder. It's been hard to see people go along with it, and hearing far too many of them cry for more and justify what's happening, and it's been very difficult to see them pretend that there's a consensus around this. And that's not the first time we've seen that, but it's been all the more difficult now. And I pretty much had this same feeling after 9/11, watching the world be manipulated emotionally and transformed by an ongoing larger media seance or a session of magic. Now, I don't know what you want to call it, to condition the behavior of the entire population. Certainly here in the United States and also on a global level that is still felt deeply by everyone, or nearly everyone. And so for everybody who has also seen that on one level or another and tried to speak out and try to do the right thing about this and many other issues, you know, we know that resistance is very important and speaking out is essential. It's very, very important. It's also important, though, to recognize the possibilities of falling right into the Hegelian dialectic trap, even when you're trying to do the right thing, and even when you're coming from a wiser position than you were thinking from a couple of years before. There's still that danger. It's almost an ever-present danger. Only a few years ago, the phony left-right paradigm was one of the most talked about aspects of the corrupt system, and it felt almost like a universal recognition that the politics that is sold on TV and pushed around to people that everyone pretends is legitimate is so incredibly phony. And they ask people to basically endorse and go out and vote and do your part and be part of democracy and endorse the evil of two lessers, not even just the lesser of two evils. You know, there was a wide recognition of that as being a very crucial and entirely corrupt aspect of the system that itself needs to be done away with. And this criticism was felt by alternative voices on the left, on the right, all across the spectrum, up, down, left, right, backwards, three-dimensionally, you know. And today, the chasm between the left and right, instead of being done away with and reduced for the illusion that it is, it's been deepened, and contradictingly so. Many abstainers from this pointless system, many critics of the corrupt political system, who see themselves as outsiders opposed to the extremes of the other side, have in turn, because of the extremes of the opposite side, joined back into that system, held their nose, and actually tried to convince themselves and others that it was good to support the destruction of rights. That is a necessary evil to support this system because the other side of it is so bad. Guess how that works out. And, you know, through the reintegration into the political system, it's known in political science, it's known as a political realignment, and I was taught that they tend to happen in history, at least in the U.S. political system, about every 30 years. And ours had been overdue for about a generation. And that might have to do with why it's so wildly swinging. But we see people getting back into that system and digging back in on kind of a new wave of issues. And it's gone pretty far because I see a lot of people who were critical of the system who are now supporting the idea of taking away rights of the other side, who support the degradation of ordinary people, at least socioeconomically speaking, so long as that destruction of rights was aimed at their ideological opponents. And rather than focus due criticism, dosed with ample fact and research, at the shadow controllers who pull the strings, not only in the political system, but in the banking system and finance, basically every major corporation of every type, in universities and laboratories, starting with the most prestigious down, rather than focusing the role of shadow controllers in healthcare and the dissemination of medical knowledge and the decisions of what kind of treatments are even recognized and supported, and focusing due criticism on the shadow controllers of media, publishing, education, and every other aspect that is attempting to approach a total monopoly, even over the ideas that we think that are consumed by this population, rather than focus on that as a total system with tentacles and different sides and different shades, but which has controllers and subsidiaries and vassals, which despite its contradictions is unified and balanced in the design and towards a larger purpose, rather than focus on that as the issue at hand. Far too many people, especially since the last couple presidential elections, have instead turned their focus away from criticizing that system to a politics of identity and to petty ideology, insignificant cultural clashes, and increasingly segmented them and tried to make them personally felt and really set camps against each other. It's pretty crazy, and it's gotten really out of hand. For several terms of office now, the prevailing energy of the masses, most of these people have been consumed and used up by the underlying question by which to measure every issue, the question of whether or not the current commander-in-chief is the best or the worst, and they're both terrible most of the time, almost all the time. The corporate executives were all bailed out right before this pandemic started in this phase of the collapse, and they got their golden parachutes, their bonuses, and they took off, and new figureheads took over in hundreds of corporations, boards, trusts, foundations. And these corporate executives, these banker types, this upper 1%, you know, there used to be a lot of heat on them, but after a few years, it's cooled off and they're relatively obscure in spite of two recent financial collapses that have been huge on a global level, especially in the United States. And, you know, the spotlight of 1%, the 99% Occupy, you know, there were legitimate issues there. And it also signified that people were recognizing a higher organization of things. So I think it was positive, at least in that sense. You know, even to the extent that that movement was politically divided and left-leaning and whatever. But the financial collapse of 2011 that helped to drive that movement, it's come back around anyway. You know, a decade later, more biting and stinging than ever.
All right, let's stop it there because he said a lot.
Yeah.
What say you?
Well, there was a quote in there, and I think we've passed it, you know, in there already, so I will quote it now. If a ruler wants to play the game by himself and follow secret policies, he must present a decoy to the masses. He cannot escape the mass, but he can draw himself and that mass an invisible curtain, a screen on which the mass will see the projected the image of some politics, while the real politics are being made behind it. So that's saying there's a government behind the government. You see what I'm saying? There's a curtain.
Right.
And what we're dealing with, and there was kind of a warning there about this identity getting involved in identity politics, you know, because
right.
Behind there, what we see, you know, in the open, there's actually that invisible curtain behind it where there's a whole set of people running the show behind the curtain. And we're only looking at
right.
The people standing on the other side.
Right. Right. Yeah, you
Your
know,
thought?
When you look at the Wizard of Oz, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Straw Man, and the Cowardly Lion. As they're talking to the wizard, and the wizard is talking back to them, they're all four of them are shaking in their boots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the wizard is nothing more than a man behind a curtain pulling levers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then if you remember, what they saw was there was a screen, and on this screen you saw this green figure with a
mm-hmm.
distorted face talking back to them. So they never saw the guy behind the curtain, but there was this big, huge, spirit-like being on a big
mm-hmm.
screen that they were looking at, and he's talking to them and yelling at them.
Yep.
And the only one who was able to sniff out that the wizard was not the wizard, that the wizard was a fake, was little Toto, who
mm-hmm.
went and bit the curtain, and Toto's as big as a Chico there. So I'm thinking about Chico
mm-hmm.
biting on the curtain and pulling the curtain back. And then everybody's
right.
able to see the Tin Man and Dorothy, and they're able to see that there's a guy, you know, speaking into a microphone, yelling at them and pulling on levers, but it's the little tiny dog who's
mm-hmm.
able to unmask what's going on, and the adults in the room were just shaking in their boots. And when I hear
That's
this
it.
Guy talk, I think of that, right?
That's
that
exactly,
little Toto, yeah, little Toto is the only
yeah.
one who has enough sense
right.
to realize that everything on CNN, everything on Fox News, and I mean everything, everything on these
yep.
channels is an orchestration,
mm-hmm.
right, to get you to,
yeah.
And again, what news can we trust? I don't know that we can trust any news. I don't care what news
That's
agency
right.
it comes from.
Well,
because
you know, they
all
they
have their own
create
slant.
These delusions. Yeah, they create the illusion themselves in the news. They flip
right.
things. I mean, we have a story here where you got to analyze both sides of the situation, you know,
right.
on things. We had, and Hugo touched on this, and I was thinking about it when the story came out, so I would agree with him. We had that trucking situation in Canada. You had over 50,000
right.
trucks protesting against the lockdown restriction. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so on the one hand, you're saying, that's great that all these truckers are standing against tyranny, you know, and lockdowns. So you want to say to them, fantastic. But on the other hand, if you look at the other way, they're carrying supplies that we need for everyday life, and that stops the supply chain. Do you see how this
mm-hmm.
game works?
Right.
There's two sides to this.
Right.
What looks good one way and underneath. So, you know, my mind went to both. Okay, this is great. You know, someone's taking a stand. But on the other hand, they have our food. They have our
right.
car parts. They have
right.
everything we need on those trucks that are protesting. So do you see how they create this illusion? You know, it may look good on the surface, but underneath, you know,
yeah,
it's something else.
Sure, sure.
And it's
sure.
interesting you chose the Wizard of Oz because that's one of these people's favorite movies, and I often wonder if that was made with this knowledge. You know what I mean? With
right.
that little guy behind the,
yeah.
you know. And the Bible tells us that we're going, you know, people will be shocked what they've seen, that they were deceived, who they were deceived by. You see, the devil.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to be shocked by that.
Right. I mean,
is that him?
I watched the... Yeah, I watch the local news, and they say Omicron is taking over upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to people, and they say, hey, I don't know anybody who's got Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They go
yeah.
by hospitals, and the parking lots are empty. And they go into the hospital, and no problem.
Right.
Right? So The news is presenting one case or one scenario. They have this image, right? And then you say to yourself, but wait a minute. I'll give you another. I'll give you a perfect example. Omicron has taken over America. Now, if you watch NFL football for the last couple of weeks, the playoffs, those stadiums in each playoff game were packed. 70,000, 80,000, 100,000 people. I mean, those stadiums were packed. The people were packed like sardines. Wait a minute. I thought Omicron was taking over. So they tell you something on the newscast, and then when you watch a sports event, you say, I mean, I just saw the LA Rams San Francisco game in the new LA stadium. Because now they're making these stadiums huge. These huge stadiums, 100,000 people. Wait a minute. They're packed like sardines. And then the other thing is this. Tickets are sky high. People will pay $10,000, $15,000 for a ticket. And imagine, there's 100,000 people in the stand. Can you imagine the money that these people have made? Then L.A., right, who's, you know, I mean, that's California. That's Omicron Center, right?
Yeah.
Now they're because the Super Bowl is in L.A., they're cleaning up the streets. They're taking all the homeless bums off the street, right, because they want to clean up the city for the Super Bowl. But wait a minute. Yeah. I thought you said Omicron. I thought the city was on shutdown.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So they present one thing in the news, and then when you watch sports events, you say, wait
a minute.
They're
showing
you
another.
People don't care. People don't care what you're telling. They're not listening.
Yes.
They're not listening. See? So, again, this
it's
is
a controlled chaos.
Yeah.
It's controlled chaos. All the time,
right?
Because they know, they really know that you can see this going on.
Right.
But so many people don't say anything because there's also a threat behind it.
Right.
Because there's a threat, okay, we'll get locked up if we say, or we'll do this. So it's keeping you in this controlled chaos all the time, getting you thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that it's a matter of getting you to a place where you no longer recognize right from wrong. That's what this, you know, what is real, what isn't real. That's where they're trying to take you with this. So, and as far as the leaders go, when we're talking about behind the scenes, think about the Roman Catholic Church. That came to mind, the Pope. He's been behind the scenes, you know what I mean? He's ahead of all this. Look at the Roman Catholic Church. He's the head of that. I mean, really, who is he?
Right.
He's in his own country, runs his own country, makes the rules.
Who
is he?
Sure. And it's all smoke.
Does he really have the power? Does he really have the power?
This is a wonderful audio. Wonderful. All right.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah.
They're both good, him and the wife. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every issue, the question of whether or not the current commander-in-chief is the best or the worst, and they're both terrible most of the time, almost all the time. The corporate executives were all bailed out right before this pandemic started and this phase of the collapse, and they got their golden parachutes, their bonuses, and they took off, and new figureheads took over in hundreds of corporations, boards, trusts, foundations. And these corporate executives, these banker types, this upper 1%, you know, there used to be a lot of heat on them, but after a few years, it's cooled off, and they're relatively obscure in spite of two recent financial collapses that have been huge on a global level, especially in the United States, and, you know, the spotlight of 1%, the 99% occupy, You know, there were legitimate issues there, and it also signified that people were recognizing higher organization of things. So I think it was positive, at least in that sense, you know, even to the extent that that movement was politically divided and left-leaning and whatever. But the financial collapse of 2011 that helped to drive that movement, it's come back around anyway. You know, a decade later, more biting and stinging than ever. But this time, rather than get a focus on the real system of power that we must resist and encouraging other people to see that and to open their eyes to it, nearly all the people's people, regular people out there, the ones that I've encountered in one way or another, who've taken up issues and become politically aware, politically enlightened, politically engaged, fired up about one issue or another, whether or not I agreed with it, the vast majority of these people have gotten caught on the barbed wire, if you will, snared by the petty traps set out by our formidable enemy, and what's left to really shine a spotlight where it should be shown.
In this world, which is getting more and more closely interconnected, we have to learn to tolerate each other. We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like. We can only live together in that way.
With the best of intentions, some of us have tried to speak out and change things. And yeah, we're all only one people, but you know, there has been a significant shift in awareness to a certain extent, and I feel good about that. Unfortunately, it's just not enough. There's always been many fights in the struggle, many contradictions, different sides to things, but a lot of legitimate issues, no matter how they're seen on the spectrum. And the unrepresented rightfully have had their own counter grievances, respectively, to each of those types of things. But the long shot of it is that every contrivance of demographic divide has surfaced, ideological camps have been formed, and basically everyone in the so-called political debate of the sorry, pathetic excuse for one, for generations now, have become so dug in to this confusing struggle and whatever camp they adopted inside of this fog of war, that we all generally as a people have been pitted against one another in so many different ways and have in so many different ways stood in each other's way for a larger lack of vision. And
I would also say this, you know, he's making some good points here, but here's the point. Here's a slight point where I disagree.
Right.
The media is not pitting me against the gays.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the media may be pitting the gays against me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The media may have effect on stupid people to get them to attack other people. Now, the reason why there's a divide between me and the gays is not the media. The reason why there's a divide is the Bible. The Word of
exactly.
God tells me
yes.
no to these people.
Yes.
Not the media. So
yes.
the override, what guides me, what guides you, and what should guide
mm-hmm.
every Christian in doing right or wrong or saying no or saying yes is the Word of God.
Absolutely.
Now, I know,
and that's
now, I know
I
that
he's a spiritual stance. You know, we have
right.
a different, this is more of the worldly view, understanding what they're feeling
right.
on it. We
correct.
Know the
correct.
Answers.
Absolutely.
But go
ahead. Absolutely.
I agree.
But the guy is very good. But on that, I would say, well, I'm going to take it to a higher authority. The reason why
mm-hmm.
I cannot work with gays, or let's talk about a guy like Glenn Beck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I not work with Glenn Beck? Well, he's a Mormon. He's
right.
a Mormon. I'm a Christian. I have, and he has a project called the Nazarene Project, named after Jesus. I don't
mm-hmm.
care what he does in the Nazarene Project. I'm not joining him. Why? Because he's a Mormon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
see?
Exactly.
So it may have good intentions. But his Lord
mm-hmm.
is different from mine. And my Lord tells
yep.
me, not to become unequally yoked together with unbelievers.
Unbelievers,
that's what my
Lord yes.
says to me. See, so
yep.
we're guided by
so
the
what
Bible.
He's, yeah, I mean, we know these leaders, and we'll deal on that. I'm going to jump to here. These leaders are on the same page. We know this.
Right.
You know, the Bible tells us exactly that. And if we look at Revelation 17:13, these kings are leaders. They have one purpose. That's a will or a mind. They have one mind or purpose or will. And they give their power and authority to the beast. That's it.
Correct.
Why? Because they don't understand that they're being used by God himself. They're being used. And if we go
mm-hmm.
to Revelation 17:17, it says, for God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. That's, they're filling prophecy when they're doing this. Our job is to trust in the Lord and stay out of these traps. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that is what we do, and to warn others. So anything we hear, you know, we need to know what these traps are. Because a lot of people, it might look good on one side, like the truck. They might say, that's
right.
great. I'm glad they're protesting. Oh, that's great. But then on the other hand, we have to look at, okay, but wait a minute, that's my food on that truck that's sitting in Ottawa, you know.
Right.
So the idea, and I think, you know, the idea he's projecting is to make people aware. Our standard is always what does the Bible say? Now,
correct.
We understand that these are traps that Christians may fall into just
right.
if they don't know the Word of God. Because
right.
at the end of the day, prophecy is being fulfilled. That's what this is. God's allowing all this. But we need to understand what is so we don't get into the trap. You know,
right.
and I think
right.
that, you know, that's always our standard. So we'll keep saying that no matter what he says. But he has done the research on what they're doing. So,
absolutely.
You know, we have to keep
absolutely.
That in mind.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right.
You know,
here we go.
Listen, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, when to walk away and when to run. You know?
Sure. Absolutely.
Kenny Rogers song.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
So, okay.
We have to learn to tolerate each other. We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like. We can only live together in that way.
With the best of intentions, some of us have tried to speak out and change things. And yeah, we're all only one people, but you know, there has been a significant shift in awareness to a certain extent, and I feel good about that. Unfortunately, it's just not enough. There's always been many fights in the struggle, many contradictions, different sides of things, but a lot of legitimate issues, no matter how they're seen on the spectrum. And the unrepresented rightfully have had their own counter grievances, respectively, to each of those types of things. But the long shot of it is that every contrivance of demographic divide has surfaced, ideological camps have been formed, and basically everyone in the so-called political debate or the sorry, pathetic excuse for one, for generations now, have become so dug in to this confusing struggle and whatever camp they adopted inside of this fog of war that we all generally as a people have been pitted against one another in so many different ways and have in so many different ways stood in each other's way for a larger lack of vision. And, you know, it's hard to communicate people's differences, and where you just don't agree, it's hard to reach an understanding, of course. But how much of that fuel and energy is burnt off that deserves to be spent on a different fire? Just putting the question out there. Understand there is somewhere a difference between the top-down buzzwords about things like unity and togetherness and community those types of things. And between expensive promotions and billions of dollars in advertising and news positioning and so forth, in order to convey a general contrived message of something like unity, in it together, let's roll, hope and change, make America great again, stay the course, all the other slogans, and to put those out so practically everyone can get on board, or basically everyone in one of the two main camps can back that, because it's generic. It's positive. It's nothing anyone really would disagree with, not his words. And whatever your version of that is, whatever unity means to you or hope and change, your ideas get invested into that general slogan, and you could be under that banner. That's how it works on a larger scale. Those buzzwords are very important. That's why they use them and why they spend such big money promoting such simple concepts. God, we're suckers. But there's a huge difference between that kind of top-down buzzword idea of unity, togetherness, and, say, ever actually coming together as a community. Not as a community that comes together and gives all its power to some kind of dictator or an evil board or something, but a community that can work together wherever it needs to, you know, to whatever extent. Where that does happen, where community really does exist, you can feel it. You can feel it down in your bones. It's an organic experience, and there's no way to put it into words, and maybe some people scoff at it, but other people know how real that is and can be, and how alive it could feel. And so some people understand that and some don't. But that idea of community, you know, it exists pretty easily in physical spaces. Maybe you've noticed them in certain types of festivals and things like that, or local churches or whatever. But can those types of things be meaningfully translated into a larger scale, a mass scale, achieved at a national, at a mass level, with 320 million people or 8 billion people or any kind of numbers like that? Can you really ever have a true togetherness? You can have loose-knit ideas, but not on a practical level. It's scary when it becomes practical. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And I don't know. It's just propaganda versions of unity and the real idea of us coming together to commonly support our rights, to recognize, you know, the importance of the struggle of the vast majority of the people for whom the system was even designed in the first place. I don't know. I think when they try to get people together on that big of a level, there's scams involved. I think it's a false idea. I think it's an easily manipulated notion. I don't know. I'm very skeptical of it. I think that it should be treated with due skepticism. I doubt the authenticity of anything where everyone's like, gotta do what you're told, gotta do your part. It's for the greater good. Be very careful.
Well, think about Make America Great Again. Okay, mm-hmm. Trump found the rallying cry, but mm-hmm. the bottom line is it put Trump on top.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain extent, Trump. Right, Trump. Right. You see, now of course I didn't want Hillary Clinton. I didn't want her.
Exactly.
She was the female version of Obama on
mm-hmm.
steroids. So I didn't want her, and
exactly.
I saw Trump as the better alternative. But
mm-hmm.
he's the lesser of two evils. He's still evil.
Yes, exactly.
Again, because as Christians, we are looking for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Donald Trump is
exactly.
not my king, and Earth or America is not my home. My citizenship is in heaven.
Yes.
You see, so
yep.
again, put things in perspective and realize
mm-hmm.
that we got a reprieve with Trump. But Trump was never going to solve the issue
right.
of sin. He was never going to bring America. In fact, Trump was the cause for the greater division in America because he's such a
mm-hmm.
lightning rod of a person.
Right.
Right? So Look, the only answer is Jesus. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only answer. Yep. And that's what we hold
it'll
to.
It'll always come back to that for us with the Christian, you know?
Right.
So all
right.
these answers are in the Lord. We started right out with that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm saying. We look at this, the Christians are going to look at this, you know, through the lens of Scripture and everything. You know, we know what's going on, but, you know, like I said, as far as the community involvement goes, there's a difference between working together in a community and joining with that community to turn our freedoms over to someone else. That's a no.
Right.
Now, I can be a part of the community to do something within the community without giving my freedoms away. You know, saying,
mm-hmm.
oh, I'll join with you to give our freedoms to someone else. You know, uniting
right.
together to help someone, you know, or something, you know, if we unite with that to help someone, that's one thing. But when you...
Right.
In that, if you lose your independence, person as an individual, that's another.
Correct.
You know, that's a totally different thing.
Correct.
So, and what society, what they're trying to get you to do in society is to unite together to lose your independence, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right, right,
and your
right.
independent thinking, your critical
right.
thinking.
Right.
This is what they're trying to unite you with in this.
Right. It's like
so,
it's like Democratic politicians. They'll always say, we'll always have the black vote because all blacks will vote for us.
Mm-hmm.
See? Because they think that all black people are going to think the same, and that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
See? It's not one monolith.
That's right.
But
that's what they're trying to make it, aren't they? They're just trying to mold that into one knot, you see?
Right. Yes.
That's what they're doing. Now, there's a quote. I don't know if the quote came up yet from Jacques again. And it says, the propaganda first of all to create unconditional reflexes in the individual so that certain words, signs, or symbols or certain persons or facts provoke unfailing reactions. The important thing is that when the time is right, this is showing you something, the individual can be thrown into action by the utilization of the psychological levers that have been set up. Now, I'm not sure if you got to that yet in this, but they're going to flip the switch.
I didn't hear that yet. No, I didn't hear that yet.
Okay, you might see it on the screen because I'm quoting
okay.
the screen quotes on there. But
okay.
what they're going to do, it's very important, this is, because they want to do their conditioning people and their reflexes, and we've known that in churches for years, how people
sure.
have been conditioned.
You
know,
absolutely.
But they use the sign, symbols, certain persons, facts. You know, they
mm-hmm.
use these people to get unfailing reactions, to get
right.
you moving by emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
when the time is right for them, they can just switch the light on, you know, and
correct.
And the switch and turn people against each other. Now, that's important scripturally, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ahead.
No. Okay, let's play it.
Okay.
Things of that scale, that's all I'm saying. When that kind of global response is meant to be felt at all, when its dictates are instantly complied with by every business, every local and state government entity with no real holdouts and no real debate about putting things in a position, and especially when it's done under the idea of it being an emergency and it being under emergency powers. Man, you know, All I'm saying is buyer beware. I guess my point is, while other issues are important, the larger problem that we face, the larger system collapse, that's something we really should focus on. And our consent as people, as individuals, as a community, as a population, it's the big prize. It's one of the big prizes. They cannot operate without consent. If everyone was completely dissatisfied, almost any regime, no matter how terrible, would eventually be toppled over. The issue here is that they've used their media buzzwords, they've used their false sense of community and their false sense of belonging and togetherness, their counterfeit, trite, saccharine sweet sense of that, to dangle over people and persuade them to give their consent and to think they're doing the right thing by being part of it. That's what I'm saying to question. Our consent here is one of those big prizes, and it's like an unchaste bride with an attractive dowry, you know, that is just giving away her consent too trivially for someone who doesn't even really love her, you know. We should question our compliance in that way. We should question our compliance with this system. Is this a system that deserves our consent, that is worthy of shared power, of taking on that authority? They usually don't ask, and that's usually not a good sign, people. When they do ask, they don't ask very meaningfully, and it's just a procedural thing, and I think everyone can understand that's usually not a good sign. We should be cautious with our consent to this authority and question its basis and legitimacy, whatever the issue is, every time. That should be the basic checklist. Let's be cautious with our consent to this authority and question its basis and legitimacy. Just question number one for every case, especially this time in this pandemic. All this is very hard for some people to understand, and for others, it's obvious and inherent, and it's just repetitious for me to have even pointed it out. And I'm not sure what to do about that difficult distinction. There's a lot of people who have kind of convened over the years. We've heard from each other. We've all seen comments and videos and whatnot and articles and shared news. So we all become kind of a community who understands that. But then there's still everyone else for whom it's crucial they also understand this and begin to take action. And I have, unfortunately, not enough idea what to do about that very difficult and important distinction. How do we reach those who don't or won't get it? And how do we reach them before it's too late? And so I don't know what to do, but I do think it's important to acknowledge as much of the truth as I know and I can easily encapsulate.
This film has illustrated certain resemblances between the ways pigeons behave in this box under varying reinforcement schedules and the ways people behave under various conditions and circumstances. In general, then, the effects of reinforcement on behavior vary according to the kind of schedule on which reinforcement takes place. These effects clearly have an important bearing on many aspects of education, work, and social adjustment, and present a challenging field for further research.
That they want healthy children, they will therefore want to space them so that they can feed them better, educate them better, clothe them better, and then we shall have a healthier nation. This is what we want to do.
We've been captured by a system of scientific management. We're several centuries into that scientific management, and the evidence is detailed and voluminous, and a lot of it's on the historical record, bottom line.
Interested industrialists, by a wise government, and by their own educated choices, they are deciding to keep families small. In China, India, indeed almost across the globe,
we live in a matured new world of chartered land and people who have been treated as property first and foremost.
My views, which really are government views, is that family planning is an integral part of development planning. You cannot hope to plan other forms of production if you cannot plan the production of the main resource, the human beings. The main resource, the human beings.
We live in a system of classified and weighted and valued people under eugenics. They've scientifically studied and measured people and come up with unscientific, biased ideas of who and what should be promoted, who is allowed to produce with whom.
A jury judges the family's pedigree.
And that eugenical system is supposed to be administered by a wise authority who, by the way, in being wise, also want to be secretive and even unknown altogether. The eugenical system was put in a number of Western countries and laws in the early 1900s. It obviously had great consequences by World War II, but was in play for several decades and well before World War I started.
This is it. Eugenics Records Office. This building, which you can't see too well, housed the records office before the other one was built, the Stewart House.
Yeah, well, you didn't mention the Eugenics Record Office at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's on campus, though, right?
Yeah, so that's before the research project we're working on now, the molecular research project, happened. And we don't want anything to do with that. That's part of the history, right?
But that's why this whole place was founded, though.
It wasn't founded for the eugenics. But it happened. Yeah.
Okay.
And then really unfortunate things happened.
Okay.
But we do none of that anymore here.
If you say so.
Parallel to the advance of eugenics, American genetic research leads the world.
And it was very much a topical classification data collecting system. And I would argue that it's a data collecting system in anticipation of the computer revolution and the data revolution. And I say that having studied it in detail.
Do you know who David Koch is?
Yeah, isn't he one of the Koch brothers?
Well, that's what I thought.
I think it is.
To me, that's Cold Springs Harbor genetic cornfield.
Agricultural field station.
They're growing corn.
And under that umbrella of a scientifically managed system, the economy is planned, and it's controlled by a shadow cabinet. Which countries could trade with each other is controlled and planned. What wages are allowed in different countries, what products can be made, what can be imported. And it's not by the older system, by which there is at least local advantage for the countries who implemented it. It's now administered scientifically at the global level by a shadow cabinet. It's at least people whose names you could find, but they're not known to the public. No one voted for them. They were appointed, and they have enormous power. We live in a system scientifically managed in which the standards of living are lacking, and based upon allotments and rations and a gifting sort of sense of, here's what you need to survive, but you better keep up your part of it. Politics under the scientifically managed system is united behind the smokescreen of the left and right divide, as we've already discussed, behind identity politics and hero candidates, and an almost religious fervor and a knowledge that the easiest way to gain votes is to appeal to them emotionally, not logically or on sound principles. And these father figures and mother figures who represent the, quote, authority of the country, of the nation, of the will of the people even, this false authority is preening around and getting everyone's attention and taking up all this energy, all while the hen house is being systematically looted of any and all remaining moral capital, the foundations of principles, of good principled ideas, those are being raided and toppled and destroyed, and other motives are being enhanced in the system.
This guy is very deep, very good. I like him.
Yes.
He's very captivating.
Wow, did he cover a lot of things?
Yeah. Yeah, the eugenics, he covered that. He covered the way that countries decide who gets what, who gets to trade with who, the keeping of a database to let us know what they think, you know, what group, what ethnic group is the strongest, what ethnic group is the weakest. All of this is for Antichrist.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. As far as the eugenics, what the saints couldn't see was a private residence that was the eugenics records office at one time. And that's at Cold Spring Harbor in New York.
Right.
And that was from 1910 to 1939. And it was established by the Carnegie Institution of Washington Station for Experimental Evolution. That's been going on back then.
Right. Well,
they have a department of genetics in there.
Right, right, right. Let me give you, and you've done shows on this in the past, take a guy like Bill Gates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is he so involved in vaccines and buying up farmland? Well, he's the modern-day Andrew Carnegie.
Yeah.
That's who he is.
That's it.
You see? One guy replaces the other in the next generation, but it's the same baloney.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, he knows what's best for the African nations when it comes to vaccine. Who gave him the authority? Nobody elected him.
That's right. There
who
it
told
is.
Him to be butting his
official.
Nose? Right, who told him to be butting his nose in other people's business?
Yes.
But that's what these people do. See, they do that on purpose. It's the same thing.
Well, that KGB guy started out by telling us these are all unelected officials that are in power.
Right.
Remember that?
Like Fauci. Yeah, like Fauci.
Yeah. We were seeing it. And by the way, this audio... When I looked at the date of it, I think it was September 2020 he did this.
Right, right.
Talk about ahead of his time here on a few
sure.
things. One of the things I found strange was, you know, during the month, you can have a public tour of that Cold Spring Harbor, the research campus there. And it said there they had a cluster of brightly covered buildings with extensive laboratories, networked underground, you know, of the island community.
Mm-hmm.
It had Kissinger, and that was a laboratory, and that was Henry Kissinger's brother.
Right.
Who always calls for an NWO, you know, Kissinger did. We need a new world order. Remember how he... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they tried, the campus tries to distance themselves from bad things done there. What bad things?
Oh, sure.
She said, we don't deal with that. You heard her. We don't deal with those bad things.
It's like Fauci. He says, I never heard of Wuhan. What's Wuhan? What's that?
Yeah.
And he's sending money over there.
Yeah.
They distance
and we're buying
themselves.
Their masks.
Right. Sure.
That's the thing.
They do this. Listen,
but they've been collecting data.
Game.
Yeah. They've been collecting data on people before the computers were invented to store it. You know?
Listen,
that place was 1910 to 1939.
Yeah. No, listen, they are planning this. This is just a trial run. What happened with COVID is just a trial run.
Mm-hmm.
They got other things up their sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
They have other things.
Yep.
There's more to come. So it is what it is.
And as far as as far as consent goes, I wanted to say something on that. You know, I saw an argument. Where's my note on that? Because there was something. I saw an argument the other day on a YouTube feed. Someone was accusing the other of having sold illegal vaccine passports to fly. Now, the argument was about the passports. Somebody did them illegally. They never got to the point that they're not required to use
right.
them. The whole argument became about they both presumed that it was a part of the law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
They never stopped to consider that they weren't the law of the land. You would have to ignore the Geneva Convention and the Nuremberg, you know, trials and all that to do that.
Right.
That's worldwide. That's a code of ethics for the treatment of humanity. But these two never recognized that the argument, or maybe they did, and it's a part of this game, that they were arguing about something that didn't exist,
mm-hmm.
you see, and
right.
wasn't mandatory.
Right.
And they were promoting it. The fight became about that. And, you know, everyone swayed with, well, the person shouldn't have made those passports illegally. The other one, you know, is arguing back and forth, yeah, they need to be turned in. But the conversation never came around that about permission. And if they were legal, you see what I'm saying with that?
Yeah.
The whole thing was thrown off. The whole
mm-hmm.
argument never was about the truth. When you got done, you wondered at the end of it, who really understands that they aren't even legal and they aren't even used? You know, who understood that?
Yep.
Nobody. Nobody.
Yep.
So, no one questioned
Amazing.
It.
Yep.
It is.
Yep.
Okay.
And corruption and all the most selfish motives are enhanced, and even our legislators and political representatives, as hard as it would be to become those people in society, those people are little more than puppets, prostitutes. You know, they go to the highest bidder. That's the scientifically managed system we're in, because it's all illusion management. The science is in making people feel satiated, like they had a hand in the choice, like they are helping to guide the system. That's the left-right divide. Behind it, though, it's just a bought-out system that does the will of the people who supply the most money. So it's a scientifically managed system that's pseudoscientific. And in the scientifically managed system, obviously the banking system underlies it all, earning interest for the tiny handful of shareholders as it lends money not only to entities but to governments themselves at interest, money that is then multiplied amongst the population of people in a global market of ersatz commodities, cheap plastic crap that's made under planned obsolescence, everything from electronics to cars designed to break shortly after the warranty and shortly before they want you to start thinking about buying your next model. And all this thinking surrounding this consumerism of politics and society is all driven by the media and the mindsets they reinforce and put into place. That's the scientifically managed system. It's based on conditioning and getting people to willingly accept cheaper and cheaper versions of what they accepted before.
In these experiments, we have demonstrated the effect on behavior and work output of three schedules of reinforcement: fixed ratio, fixed interval, and variable interval. We have seen that when an organism gets paid in direct ratio to the amount of work done, work output is fairly constant. We have also seen that when an organism is required to wait a fixed period of time and then is paid for a minimum amount of work, the total output of work may fall off, and the little work that is done comes around payoff time. And finally, we have seen that when the organism is paid at irregular intervals, without any clear relationship to time or to work output, the organism works continuously and at a very high rate.
Under the scientifically managed system, technology takes a philosophical place in society in which machines and devices and computers, etc., aren't just their individual parts, but they're a wave of larger technology, and they go hand in hand with the technique of the owners and the guiders and the operators to control humanity. It's about how that technology is applied, and guess what? It's applied to control humanity. I say that in due respect to research and scholarship. I don't just say that. Technology is not merely about improvement and progress, but it's about an actual belief that technology is the salvation of humanity. For the technocrats, it's almost as if nothing would go too far as long as technology was part of the solution.
Unbelievable progress can be made, both inventing new vaccines and making sure they get out to all the children who need them.
The solution you never asked for, the solution that's worse than the problem you started with, is it technology? The answer is yes.
The benefits there in terms of reducing sickness, reducing the population growth, it really allows the society a chance to take care of itself once you've made that intervention. Reducing the population.
The technocrats.
Of course, that's Bill Gates.
Yes.
Right?
He caught that clip that they deleted. Well, we did the clip a few years ago at the TED conference, and
right.
Bill Gates talked about vaccines as population, to use them in population control. And we talked about what they did in Africa. What he did in Africa. We discussed that, but that tape disappeared. So he does have a clip here of him speaking about the vaccine and their role.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Right. Yep. Again, an unelected person deciding who's born, who's not born, who gets what, and he talks about intervention. Listen, if you want to intervene, intervene in your marriage that fell apart.
Yeah.
Stop meddling in other people's business.
Well, they want to be God. This is a religion. I mean, this is a religion, a belief system, you know, where science and technology will save humanity to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a belief
right.
system that they have. And this is back to the technocrats, you see?
Right.
It goes right
yep.
back to the technocrats. And technocracy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, here's more. This is excellent. I got to tell you, this is very good.
Thank you.
This is very, very good. And the guy, Liz, the guy's not a screaming Pentecostal, but he's very soft-spoken, but he's getting
mm-hmm.
his point across. You don't have to scream to make your point.
Yes. He's a logical thinker, that's for sure. And
yes.
I know that he's an excellent researcher, and he, you know, really dissects different things. You know, he's good at that and taking it and,
right.
you know, presenting it, articulating that back. So.
Right. All right.
Okay.
None of this goes too far because it all supports their larger aim of proper scientific management of the population. And under this system, individual power, the meaning of individual lives and the weight of our individual decisions, especially the most meaningful among them, is dangled in front of our increasingly fragmented and steered and diluted lives. People cluster into their mindset groups, our audience included, and they clash on a regular basis with fresh ideological opponents, and they race to this issue and race to that issue, and a lot of those issues are certainly important and worth talking about, but don't lose the forest for the trees. The ideological opponents that are being clashed with, no matter how naive or stupid or wrong their belief might be, few, if any, of those people hold any real power within the system. Where's your focus? Are you just charging like a bull when you see red? I don't know. Under this system of scientific management, huge amounts of money have gone into further developing technology and into refining and bulking up the systems that they have, the institutions that are designed, at least in theory, to benefit the masses and aid their survival. These powers that be, under this scientific management system, haven't cured poverty. They haven't even taken a serious dent in it. They haven't cured cancer or heart disease or anything else we might put on that list. They haven't healed the wounds of history and the previous clashes between people, or particularly provided a very fair deal for everyone. Some things have gotten better over the years, but not everything. But now, the same system of technology and scientific management, they're ready to sell the public on space missions to Mars, on massive particle accelerators, on new AI systems, on weapon systems ad nauseum, obviously, and every type of technology that in the digital world and with the Internet of Things is invading every inch of space occupied by the interaction of individual people and the society in which they live. They've said, all right, we have individuals, but everything they do in this system, that's what we're going to take data on because we own that part. You might be an individual, but you've got to move around in this room. They're ready for computers and the Internet to grow and to feed AI systems combined with the Internet of Things, that they plan to invade every inch of space occupied between the people, the individual people of this world, and their interaction with the society in which they live. Every last point of interaction becomes an opportunity for data, for human behavior research, or for the application of social behavior nudging. You might have free will in theory as an individual, but every move you make is tabulated and calculated and used to feed future predictions, to suggest things to you, to nudge you, to condition you, and to lead you on to where someone else, someone who you probably don't even recognize, know, or have a good conception of, an idea that someone else wants to steer you towards. And these are just a few of the issues at hand. Obviously, if we get into specifics, this conversation will never end. And this system, of course, because it's set up on a bad foundation, because it's illusory, because it's corrupt, is crumbling. And all this is now, in our time, in the last few years especially, the last couple decades generally, it's facing system collapse. All the things we had hoped were going to get a little bit better, but that maybe technology could patch over. All the shortcomings that maybe people generally hope will be improved, they've just been kind of moving along as the system that might have made it fair collapses more and more until it just becomes a farcical joke of itself and a very dangerous dying creature. The threat...
Let's stop it there. What have you to say to that?
Well, I would say that's a great point, you know. They've never been able to solve a problem yet, you know, and all these years they've been, you know, testing and using, you know, us, we're an organism to them, you know, we're being
right.
used as their experiment, their guinea pig, if you will, you know, and they've never really solved or, you know, the problems in the world in all these years.
Well, here's the thing.
You know.
See, the Bible says the wages of sin is death. So
mm-hmm.
I don't care what Bill Gates tries to solve. He can't solve disease. He can't solve death because
right.
God said that would be a result of the fall of man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, try to be a God if you may, but you're not going to solve the major issues, the spiritual issues of man, plain and simple.
That's right.
So
what
it is
does
what
God
it is.
Do? Turns them over to a reprobate mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
And they end up fulfilling the prophecy, you know?
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing to listen to and how long it's been going on, and it makes sense. We can see it. I mean, obviously, we can see what's going on, and the idea of the whole thing is not to get caught up in these traps. You know, they're mixing right and wrong. They're, you know, calling good evil, you know, evil good. They're mixing
right.
these things, and so that you cannot, you know, see, they hope to confuse you so you can't tell the difference between right and wrong, you know, and
right.
and that's control. It's controlled chaos, and that's what they're creating here. So,
yeah, it's.
I think our problem is our love for the, you know, to the technocrats, your love of technology, your love of things, your love of your phone, the internet, and all the else, is really, they got you with that. You know, it's the people's love for their stuff that really moves us forward, I think. But go ahead.
Like I said, this is a great audio. This guy is very provocative. He doesn't scream. He's
mm-hmm.
not shouting. He reminds me of the old man in the chair, but young, right?
Yeah.
The old man
yeah,
in the chair isn't, right? He's not screaming, but he's there with his notes, and he's talking, and he's sharing, and, you know. And while he's talking very softly, he's punching people in the face and knocking them out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He has a great, witty, though. The old man in the chair, he's British. He's got that wittiness about
right,
him.
Right,
you know,
right.
He drops witty things and, you know, British wit about
all
him.
Right,
and he gives me a laugh.
Let me get a few more minutes in here before we go.
Okay.
That we see in the media, that we learn about in the news, that as a general rule we were never there to see, these threats, real or just perceived, or a mix in between, about the environment, about overpopulation, about pandemics and terrorism, about medical contagions, even the threats reported in the media about the financial collapse itself, about joblessness and mass unemployment, it's collapsing. And this collapse, there's nonstop threats and nonstop bad news, and you really have to question who's wagging the dog. All these threats, at least in as much as they're known in the media and not in your real life, these threats in the headlines and on the news, they're either real or they're perceived or they're a mix between. But either way, they're threats that are felt by the population under this scientific management system. And we're cajoled onwards, and the collapse itself accelerates as we feed energy into the false constructs, the narratives that are reported and editorialized and propagandized around these threats, again, whether they're real or perceived. And all that creates confusion and bad energy and a stymied, self-defeating sense. And then the media doubles down with campaigns against people who are individual, against people who have common sense, against people who aren't ready to just capitulate to groupthink because something is reported in the media. And to attack people who question science, who actually read studies and don't just go by the word of some scientist who's on a media show. People who don't share the population's general enthusiasm for this rule by science that is apparently so liked by the masses. You know, one of the biggest memes I've seen out there, not just on the internet, but for many years now, when I've met just ordinary people in my life, friends, family, acquaintances, and so forth, people at the grocery store, there's all these people saying, I love science. I'm a fan of science. I appreciate science. Me, I go by the science. And those people, if they're cheering on science or if they just live under a system of scientific management that they only half-heartedly recognize, those people, in accepting and approving and giving their consent for rule by science as a concept, those people in the masses cheering it on, I love science. Well, they're trusting the kind of people who have been chosen to be propagated on TV. This is not the idea that we should be ruled by superstition or that we should be Luddites and not accept any advances. But science needs to be checked by a conversation or a mental thought or a checklist concept of power of science and who might or would or will or does benefit from the balance of power when a scientific advance is made and applied. Because most of what we're talking about when we cheer on science or discuss science's role in society is not pure science of, hey, what is true? Are colors real? Is the sky really blue? Let's find out. let's go calculate it. It's how is science applied? There's a tracking device for cars. There's a camera on the street, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The surveillance society, this technologically managed society, the automated society that has contributed heavily to the unemployment, but not just giving people leisure and time off, but taking away their power to make a difference. You know, this system gains its evil in the way it's applied. By the 20th century was when things were really highly organized. That's when the bankers took larger control of the system. That's when factories began to be automated. And that's when an obvious acknowledgement of what to do with the people, how to manage them with the technology, was clearly taking place.
The free university.
We're going to end it there at the 38-minute mark. What I suggest for next week is we bring it back to the 30-minute mark because we're at 38.
Okay, we can do that.
We can bring it back to the 30. This is very, very good. I mean, and listen, I have the advantage of the video, so I'm able to see the clips, the video clips that he has, which are very good. Excellent stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. It was a great show, and you have the last word.
Well, don't let them take away your power, like he said, to make a difference. And we can make a difference, you know, through the gospel. That's where we make a difference, you know. Preach the gospel, you know. This is our hope. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Have a great day. Bye.
For sins have reached unto